Rockers in Recovery Media is dedicated to carrying the message of addiction recovery through music, news, events, and festivals taking place within and not limited to the clean and sober community.
Hey, hey, welcome to tonight's show, Radical Recovery, with your host, Jack Kelly. Jack, take it away.
Hi, this is Jack Kelly. Delighted to have the opportunity to share some thoughts and ideas with you. This week, when we spoke last week about the crisis that we're facing within the treatment center industry, I'd mentioned that if you were diagnosed with brain tumor, it required brain surgery, and you met with the brain surgeon who was going to perform the operation, and he informed you that 90% of his patients died on the operating table, that you would more than likely, unless you were crazy, look for another brain surgeon. But what would happen if all the brain surgeons that you met had a 90% failure rate? Cross your fingers and hope for the best. And I could say that that's the reality that we're faced with within the treatment industry. On average, it's a 90% failure rate. And we certainly have to ask the question, why is that? By comparison to the recovery rate experienced by the original members of AA. And one of the reasons that they had a high recovery rate is that they meditated every day. For them, it was like brushing your teeth in the morning. And you have to connect the dots in the book Alcoholics Anonymous to discover where that was pointed out. So that's, I think, one of the big reasons why the relapse rate that we have today is much higher than what they experienced during the early years of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let's take a look at what it was that the original members they did. In addition to being one of the differences between what we have now and what AA was when it started, is they went to one meeting a week. So what did they do the other six nights? They went out and met with other alcoholics. And before you could even attend an AA meeting, one of the stories in the big book explains it, you had to go through a whole series of people that wanted to make sure that you were serious about what you were doing. And if you weren't serious, they would wish you good luck and go on to the next person that they could help. So it's just a huge difference in the way that it exists today versus what it was at that time. But there was an article in the Sun Sentinel magazine, not magazine, newspaper, just on March 31st. And it picks up on what I spoke about last week. And it says, the owner of sham rehabs is jailed. Drugs as bribes and swindled insurance firms. So I'm just going to read through it with you here. Desperate drug addicts came to the Boynton Beach sober homes to kick their habits and recover. Instead, those who were insured were encouraged to indulge in what they had come to escape. Their relapses triggered extended stays and referrals for bogus testing and treatment, which earned Albert Jones, say, kickbacks and bribe money, federal prosecutors said. Say, who owned the now-defunct Sober Homes, No Drug Zone, that's a laugh, Carter Care Recovery, and A.T. Way, on Thursday was sentenced to more than 5 years in federal prison, to be followed by 3 years of supervised release. The 27-year-old in a federal courtroom in West Palm Beach also was ordered to pay more than $2 million in restitution for his involvement in a massive health care fraud scheme that swindled 36 insurance companies between 2014 and 2016. Say sometimes even gave drugs to his Soma home clients, and he funneled more than 100 of them in exchange for kickbacks to Reflections, an illicit Margate treatment center for unnecessary urine and saliva tests, drug treatment, and random drug testing, prosecutors said. Reflections was owned by Kenneth Chapman, considered the ringleader of the scheme. He also operated treatment centers and sober homes in Broward and Palm Beach counties. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced last May to 27 and a half years in prison for providing drugs to addicts to keep them vulnerable, prostituting women for his own financial gain, and raiding their health insurance to pay for sham treatment. To further the scheme, Say and other co-conspirators recruited and bribed people with medical insurance to reside in sober homes. The bribes included free or reduced rent, money and drugs, prosecutors said. In an ongoing crackdown of nefarious halfway houses and drug treatment centers, Delray police on Thursday arrested a woman who operated two homes in the city called Life Change Recovery, a police report said. Betsy Dujeste, 36, of Boca Raton, faces 34 patient brokering charges for allegedly steering her residents to London Treatment Center in West Palm Beach, the report said. The two owners of London Treatment Center were arrested in July. Dujeste, also listed as a registered agent of Away and Means Sober Home in Delray Beach, received payoffs from treatment center's owners for her referrals from February through May of 2017. She received $60,000, the report said. As an incentive for the residents she recruited to the treatment center, they would reduce weekly rent from $150 to $50, police said. So we're in deep doo-doo across the United States, because the assumption is that if you went to a doctor's office, if you're diagnosed with a terminal disease, which certainly addiction is if we don't treat it, you assume that the people that you're going to see have an actual interest in helping you. And that, unfortunately, is not the case. So where do we go for treatment? And that's not an easy question to answer these days. Fortunately, about 120 treatment centers have been closed in South Florida that were providing bogus treatment, unprofessional, unethical services. So that helps somewhat. The bad news is that the insurance companies, after being ripped off by so many parasites in the treatment industry, are now very skeptical with any claims that come in from a treatment center. So it creates a big problem now for people who are really interested in recovering, need the treatment, and the insurance company is questioning just about everything that comes in. I'm working with Treatment Centers of America, and they have adopted the three holistic recovery programs that I've been working with for the last 8 years now. And as a matter of fact, they're going to be putting them up on their website probably within about 2 days. The phenomenal results that they got in the 2 weeks that I've been working with them is just mind-boggling for them. If you take what those treatments are, the basic thing that I work with every client that I meet is that you are your own best drug dealer. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. You go to the gym, you work out, come out, you feel great. Why? Serotonin levels are up, dopamine levels are up, endorphin levels are up, serotonin levels are up. How does that happen? Deep breathing. And the therapies induce a state of meditation. It just slows down the body, the mind, the emotions. So when a patient comes in, if they're stressed out, they're anxious, they've got a headache, they've got some pain issues, they've got some cravings going on, 90% of the time, no BS, 30 minutes later, they are in a totally different space. It is a very empowering experience. and I combine that with heart math. Heart math, it's HEARTMATH, it's oneword.com, has been doing work for the last 25 years on the heart. And what they've discovered is that the heart also produces wonderful natural drugs. But the only time it produces those wonderful natural drugs is when we have positive feelings. So these therapies induce positive feelings. The breathing slows down. The visual imagery, which creates more positive feelings. So now your breath is producing these wonderful natural drugs. Your heart is producing these wonderful natural drugs. And it puts you right into a meditative state. So I think one of the major reasons that the original members of AA had that high recovery rate is because they did meditate every day. So I'm just going to point out to you where you can find this information in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's the first reference. We clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. That's on page 83 of the big book. Next, this is on page 87 of the big book. We will find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will, because self, manifested in various ways, was what defeated us, not pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs. Next one is on page 87 also. If circumstances warrant, we ask our spouses or friends to join us in morning meditation. The next quote is on page 134. The person recovering from an addiction to pills, alcohol, or drugs may find it, I've added the alcohol and drug, the pills and drugs in there, may find it hard to reestablish friendly relations with their children. Children are sometimes dominated by a pathetic hardness and cynicism. They cannot seem to forgive and forget. In time, they will see that their mother or father is a new person, and in their own way will let them know it. When this happens, they can be invited to join in morning meditation. From this point on, progress will be rapid. Marvelous results often follow such a reunion. The next quote is on page 164. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for the person who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and then for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. The next quote on meditation is from the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. The object of meditation is always the same: to improve our conscious contact with God, which is grace, wisdom, and love. We must always remember that meditation is in reality intensely practical. One of its first fruits is emotional balance. With it, we can broaden and deepen the channel between ourselves and God as each of us understands him. The next quote is from page 97 in the big book. Those of us who have come to use make regular use of meditation. We'd no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine, and for the same reason. When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail for its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. We all need the light of God's reality, the nourishment of his strength, and the atmosphere of his grace. To an amazing extent, the facts of AA life confirm this ageless truth. And while the next quote doesn't refer to meditation, specifically it refers to the spiritual life. The spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. So how do we live it? Step 11, a maintenance step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as each of us understood him. So if we go back to one of these quotes where it states that one of the practical reasons for meditating is that it creates emotional balance. And if you take a look at the one sentence that I believe sums up what's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous as far as how to solve the problem, it's when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And what is the spiritual malady? It's clarified within a couple of sentences after that. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Fear, it was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Now you throw in guilt and shame and boredom and self-pity, and you have a full-blown spiritual malady. If you think about the last time that you picked up a drink or a drug, I'd be willing to bet money that 90% of the people who had a relapse, and I've done this in groups, it was because they were bored, they were lonely, they were angry, they were depressed, they were feeling sorry for themselves, and they wanted to change the way they feel. And alcohol and drugs give us the ability to create that mood-altering experience. And what meditation does is it also gives us the ability to create that mood-altering experience. And meditation is not complicated at all. One of the other points that is made in the book Alcoholics Anonymous is that the main problem centers in the mind. And that's certainly not limited to us alcoholic and drug addicts. All you have to do is watch the news at night. But if the main problem centers in the mind, how do we solve that problem? Well, if you think about how the mind works, most of the day it is on automatic pilot. Unless you're really focused on something, it's kicking out one thought right after the other, constantly moving back and forth between the past and the future. So if you're at work and you focus on doing a project, you're at home, you're doing electrical wiring in your home, you're doing a crossword puzzle, you're right in the present moment. You're watching the Super Bowl, you're right in the present moment. When you're driving along in the car for 10 to 15 miles, an automatic pilot is going back and forth between the past and the future. So meditation is simply hitting the pause button in your brain, taking one slow, conscious breathing in, feeling your chest rise, breathing out, feeling your stomach deflate. And you can do this anytime, any place, anywhere. Sitting in a traffic light, being caught in traffic, taking a shower, standing in line at the grocery store. A million times during the day, you can hit that pause button. And that's all meditation is. It's about coming into the present moment. The greatest mistake that I've seen people make about meditation is that they think their mind is supposed to go blank. And they try to meditate, and the mind doesn't go blank, and they think they're doing it wrong, and they can't do it. And that is not the case at all. When you become aware, when you make a decision to just focus your attention either on a guided meditation, and if you go onto Google and put in guided meditations, there's all kinds of resources available there. If you want to listen to some meditation music, you can also go online, hit Google for that, all kinds of options there. Go into Pandora, put in meditation music. Once you make that decision to meditate, you'll discover very shortly that your mind just drifted off somewhere. And the key at that moment is simply to bring it back. Get back into the present moment. And when you do it on a consistent basis, the gap between the first thought and the second thought will start to increase. And it puts you right into the zone. And that's why we drink and use drugs. The very first time that I meditated, I got the same high that I got smoking marijuana because I was producing my own drugs. I didn't understand what was happening at the time. But it's simply because the way that we're designed, the way God made us, is that we can and do produce our own drugs. We just need the tools to do it. So meditation, one way of looking at it, if we think of ourselves for a moment as caterpillars, if you look at a caterpillar, you know that that caterpillar is filled with beauty and power. But that beauty and power will never manifest itself unless it connects with the cocoon. So is there a cocoon for us where that beauty and that power that we have inside us, that authentic inner strength and power, can manifest itself? And the cocoon for us as human beings is meditation. That's where we connect with that part of ourselves that enables us to transform our fears into courage, our anger into peace, our resentments into forgiveness, our guilt and shame into compassion. And I think one of the greatest benefits I've discovered of our 12-step program is that in going through a fourth step and a fifth step, there's really nothing to fear about the fourth step because there's nothing new that we learn about ourselves. We're aware of the times that we lied, cheated, stole, etc., things that we're ashamed of. But the beauty of going through that fifth step of sharing the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly with one person on this planet, that moment we experience unconditional love because we've told the whole story. And nobody said, what rock did you crawl out from under? What kind of a human being are you? So such freedom comes with that. And over the years, that freedom has increased to the point now I can listen to anybody's story, the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly, and not judge them. And it's not because I'm holier than thou. It's not because I'm better than they are. It's that I know what happens when somebody puts alcohol or drugs inside their body and they're an addict or an alcoholic, because I've done that. I know the person that I become. And that's the really thing about the alcohol and the drugs. It's the not the alcohol and the drugs that's the problem. It's what happens, the person that we become, once you get the alcohol or drugs inside our bodies. So learning to take the time to go into this cocoon, the transformation is incredible, and it works, absolutely guaranteed. Fear to courage, anger to peace, resentments to forgiveness. And then we start to practice these principles in our lives on a daily basis. We stay connected. So I think a simple way, again, of looking at ourselves as human beings, as like a caterpillar, we're filled with beauty and power, but we need a cocoon. We need a place to go to connect with that beauty and power. And if you don't believe in God, meditation will take you there. If you believe in God and you combine the prayer with the meditation, that's even more powerful. And the last and most important thing there is then taking that, those benefits that we receive from that, and then helping other alcoholics and addicts recover and performing random acts of kindness to the other human beings that are on this planet. I think Buddha, 2,500 years ago, came up with two steps which kind of summarizes what the 12 steps are about. He said, in essence, if you want to be happy, joyous, and free, two things have to happen. Number one, you have to stop creating suffering in your life and the lives of the people you say that you love. And how did he do that? He meditated every day. And how the original members of AA do it? They meditated every day. And he said, once you do that, then spend the rest of your life doing something to help alleviate the suffering of other people on the planet. Another simple way of looking at ourselves. Everybody understands how a cell phone works. If you don't charge your cell phone, at some point during the day, you won't have access to that power. You won't be able to connect with people. And if we think of ourselves as a cell phone, if we don't take time to recharge mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, then at the end of the day, our batteries are drained. And we start the next day not being renewed, not being recharged, but with that same depleted battery. And again, it's not limited to us as alcoholics and addicts. Some of the terrible shootings that have taken place in the marketplace, in the schools, in movies, in doctors' offices, there's no safe place on the planet anymore. And some of the rage and hatred that prompted some of those people to commit those acts, that wouldn't happen if on a daily basis every human being on the planet took 20 minutes just to recharge, just to get quiet, just to hit that pause button. So, in a way, we're all like Humpty Dumpty. We all fall down. We all get broken mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. And some of us recover, some of us don't. So this journey that we go through with the 12 steps that we have available to us, it takes us on a journey that helps us identify the parts of ourselves that have been broken. And it also gives us access to tools and resources that enable us to heal those broken parts. Just think about the stories that you hear when somebody gets up in, at a meeting and tells their story, and you're trying to rationalize or discover in some way how the person that's speaking to you is the same person that they're describing. And that's the power that we have within us. That's the way God made us. So this whole concept of powerlessness, if you take a look at it from the point of view of the Bible, according to the Bible, we are made in the image and likeness of God. Is that an image of power or powerlessness? I think you would say it's an image of power. It also says in the Bible that God gave us the power to rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the animals that roam the planet. I think you'll agree that's true. And according to St. John, God is love. That's true. And I think it's safe to assume that this loving God also gave us the power to rule over ourselves, the obsessive thoughts, the compulsive feelings, physical cravings that create so much pain and suffering in our lives. To put in perspective what happens to us as human beings, we get into our comfort zones. So I'm going to tell you the story and see if you can relate to it. This man was out walking his dog one Sunday afternoon, and as he passed his neighbor's home, he heard a moaning sound coming from the neighbor's porch. It was his neighbor's dog. Looking over his neighbor, he said, "What's wrong with your dog?" And the neighbor replied, "Sitting on a nail." So the man asked the obvious question, "Why doesn't he get off the nail?" The neighbor said, "Well, because it doesn't hurt enough." So for us, the nail may be a stressful job, an unhealthy relationship, financial worries, self-pity, guilt, shame, anxiety, depression, anger, fear, resentments, or addiction. So think about people you know that moan and groan about one of these nails, but they don't do anything to get off the nail because it doesn't hurt enough. So now take a look in the mirror and ask yourself, am I sitting on any nails that I'd like to get off? And if your answer is yes, then what are you going to do? Just to stretch a little bit beyond that. So if you've never meditated, pause, take in one conscious, slow, deep breath. When you're at a traffic light, when you're taking a shower, all kinds of opportunities to do that during the day. We need support from other people, and our 12-step program certainly gives that report. And there are more than 250 12-step programs that provide support for whatever substance or behavior that is creating pain and suffering in our lives. So there's no reason that no person on this planet, if we use these tools, cannot, like the phoenix, rise from the ashes of addiction. Have a great night, and thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to spend this time with you. If you have any questions,
Rockers in Recovery Radio is based on opinion only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any health or mental health issue of any kind. If you feel you need help for any health-related issues, please contact a physician or mental health professional. The opinions expressed by our guests are not necessarily those of Rockers in Recovery.